Welcome into another edition of the Dayton and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick. He is Dan. And Dan, Xavier is off to a 3-0 start in Big East play. A couple of big wins, most recently a win at home over Butler. Well, let's jump right into sort of looking at where this team stands after these three games. And it's kind of funny because they're playing well. I mean, they've won 10 in a row. They're 15-1. They beat one of their biggest rivals at home the other night and was in control pretty much the entire game. It got a little iffy down the stretch. And yet, the things I've been writing, the things on the message boards, the reaction from the fan base is all kind of like, okay, this is good, I think. Where do you kind of stand with this team right now?
I think that there's just a level of inconsistency right now. But I don't know that you can pinpoint any one particular thing. And they have obviously shown that they have enough class as a team to come back from big deficits when they dig them, when they dig those holes themselves. But I don't think you can, I mean, when you look at their last, I guess what, since the East Tennessee State game, I mean, you're talking about six games where Xavier played, I would say, really well for a half at Northern Iowa, for about 10 minutes against East Tennessee State. I mean, if you look there and you slice and dice these games, you know, maybe the last 8 minutes of the first half against Marshall, maybe about a 12-minute stretch against Northern Iowa, and then DePaul, maybe the last 10 minutes of that game. You can slice it up and you can find in the five games prior to Butler some high points and some good things that were happening, but for the most part, a lot of that time was just kind of blah. And they rode their luck a little bit. I mean, coming back from 22 points down against an East Tennessee State team that's up to 76 in KenPom, that's probably not going to happen a lot of times. Coming back, even a bad team like DePaul, had them, you know, 16 points down on their home floor with 13 minutes left. It was a 10-point game at the under 8 minutes to play. So they were riding their luck a lot, but I think when the two competent Big East teams that they played, Marquette and Butler, they played pretty well throughout. And I don't know. I mean, I still get the sense that there's a lot of uncertainty about how good is this team really. Their ranking is as lofty as it is, but we haven't really seen them play that well for periods of time yet. So this week in particular, and I think really the next 2 weeks, are really going to say something about whether this team can kind of get beyond the inconsistencies that they showed over the last month or so and really kick into gear.
When you look at the other top teams in the country this year, I mean, clearly there aren't as strong of favorites at the top across Division I college basketball. Like, we've seen everyone's already lost, obviously. The teams at the top keep kind of reshuffling because they're losing games, and no one seems to be kind of that dominant team. So when you look at it through that lens, to me, there's no question that the Xavier team is at least a top 10 team in the country. If you want to, like, say, oh, they're not five, they're seventh or sixth or something, fine. I don't really care about that, because it's kind of on any given night, any of those teams at the top can beat each other. So you're really splitting hairs there. But they're clearly a top 10 team in the country to me when I watch them. And yet we're still able to say these things like, well, they haven't put it all together yet. They're not quite playing their best ball. They're only playing well for half of a game. And that's why when I've been writing these things and saying these things, I don't even look at it as a knock on this team, because they are playing well and they are clearly one of the best teams in the country. My point when saying that stuff is more, there's more that this team can get out of it. Like, 2 years ago, and we were talking about this on the message board, but 2 years ago, that team that ended up ranked in the top five by the end of the year and beat Villanova when they were number one at home, and when Xavier was at home, I should say, and then, you know, ended up losing in the second round to Wisconsin on those shots, that team around this time of the year felt like they're playing out of their mind. They're playing so well, maybe even better than they should, you know, better than they're actually capable of playing. When I look at this team, it's the exact opposite feeling. It's like, no, this team is not playing above their head at all. They're right where they should be. In fact, I think they'll get better as the year goes on. And I mentioned in my column from the game the other night, you've got two guys on this roster in Najee Marshall and Quentin Gooden, who I think are star talents. I think those guys are going to be stars before their careers are over at Xavier. And they're kind of starting to figure some things out in terms of being scoring options. Quentin has that fine line that he's been juggling all year where he's got to get Trayvon and JP and hopefully Kaiser and the bigs going first. But when he's finding an open lane to drive, or if he's got a smaller defender that he doesn't feel to guard him, he's been taking that guy to the rim a little bit more often. And that's something that I have no doubt. Like, I think Quentin Gooden's going to be a guy who averages 14 or 15 a game by the time his career is over doing stuff like that. I mean, you add a guy who can really carry you down the stretch sometimes, as he's done in some of the recent games. And then you have a guy like Najee Marshall, who's in the same boat, can really get to the rim against a lot of different types of defenders. He's super aggressive. He does things other than just looking for a shot. He rebounds. He gets steals on defense and creates offense out of those opportunities. So when you have two guys like that who aren't really looked to be your main options, when they're your fourth or fifth or sixth options, you've got a chance to really sort of take your play to another level. And I think that's what we might see from this team if they do finally hit on all cylinders down the stretch in Big East play.
Right. I mean, you mentioned Quentin Gooden. You just look at what he's done in the three Big East games so far, 12 assists, only three turnovers. Obviously playing really good defense. Andy scored in double digits in all three of those games, which previously this year, I think he had only scored in double digits in back-to-back games one time. So you're seeing him, you know, maybe because the teams in the Big East are more familiar with Xavier's personnel and know how to defend them and know how to approach them on that end of the floor. Maybe Quentin is getting a little bit more space to operate, or feels like he's more empowered to take the reins of the offense a little bit more. So I think he's probably the most important player for Xavier in terms of especially against Providence, I think, and then even going to Villanova. I mean, it's going to be so important for Quentin Gooden as the floor general to keep his poise, distribute the ball well, to keep the team organized, and he's going to be going up against two absolutely terrific players in Kyron Cartwright and then Jalen Brunson, obviously, in Philadelphia, that are going to really be a test for him. So I look for this week to be maybe the biggest week of Quentin Gooden's season thus far.
Yeah, and I mean, it's when you look at his Big East conference, it seems like almost every game is going to be that way for him with the guards they're in here, because the stretch coming up, you've got Providence, you've got Villanova, then you've got Creighton with Marcus Foster and Kyrie Thomas, and another great backcourt. St. John's, Marcus Levette has been out, but Shamori Pons and really the rest of that group in general has been tough this season. And Seton Hall right after that, and then you're back to Marquette. So really, just a lot of good guards in this league. And Quentin's been tested this year, obviously, because there's not a lot of help on the perimeter in terms of defense. So a lot of this has been on him. And at times, I think he's done a good job. At times, I think it's tough for him to do a good job because there's not a lot of help for him. And then there's other times where he probably needs to get better defensively and continue to take more and more pride in that, because for this team, he kind of has to be their defensive stopper. There's just, you know, Kaiser Gates will take the forwards and some of the wings, but he's got to be the guy for most of the top perimeter scorers that he's going to lock them down. And obviously, he's also tasked with running the team and setting everything up on offense. So not a lot of breaks for Quentin Gooden, but I do think that's part of the good thing about, you know, that little stretch Xavier had right before conference play started, where they played Kent State and Colorado and East Tennessee State and Marshall and Northern Iowa. Even though some of those games were closer than you'd like for them to be, Chris Mack did get a lot of minutes for Paul Scruggs, Najee Marshall, and some of the other bench guys. And particularly with Paul Scruggs, he's been up and down without question, but he's clearly gained a little bit more confidence, and is at least in terms of like putting him out on the floor and handling the ball for a few minutes, you're not quite as worried as you were maybe a month ago when you were doing that about, oh no, this team's going to fall apart offensively. And being able to give Quentin Gooden a 4-minute blow in the second half before the final 8 minutes or something, I think is making a big difference for this team, just to be able to get Quentin sort of refreshed mentally and physically before he goes back in to finish those games off, because he's been great at the end of games. And that's been big for the Xavier team.
Right, right. I want to move and talk about Trayvon Blewett a little bit. You had some interesting thoughts in your in one of your recent columns about Trayvon's struggles recently, so to speak. I mean, it's tough to say that about a guy who scored 21 points on Tuesday and scored 23 at Marquette. But can you talk a little bit, walk us through sort of what you're seeing from Trayvon right now?
Yeah, and I mean, I guess it would be different if it were just like, hey, he's missed a few shots that he normally makes, and everyone felt like, yeah, he's just in a little bit of a shooting slump. I think the reason people are still talking about this and we're kind of making a bigger deal out of it, even when he's still averaging 20 points a game and putting up pretty good numbers, is that he just doesn't quite look like himself. The way he moves, the way he attacks guys. Like the other night, he started driving and just kind of looked like his feet got out in front of him and made a weird spin move and got, I don't think he got called for a travel, but it should have been a travel. And then he completely bricked the shot on a drive in transition. And I'm just like, that's not Trayvon. And defensively, his effort against Butler the other night, I just didn't think was really there at all. He looks like he's, not that he's ever been like the smoothest or most fluid athlete in the world, but he just kind of looks like he's straight up a lot of times. He's moving a little awkwardly at times. I don't know if there's something else medically that could be wrong with him. Maybe there is. They don't seem to be, you know, he doesn't seem to favor anything else in practice. They're not talking about any other types of injuries. There is the shoulder thing, which obviously hurt at the right before the season started. He re-aggravated it in the Northern Iowa game briefly. It doesn't seem like it's not holding him out anymore. He's been back at practice. He's been in games again. So I don't think the medical thing is a huge deal, but I do think for whatever reason, and maybe it's just the simple fact that he was held out of some practices for a little bit as he was kind of taking care of the shoulder injury, he just hasn't been in sync. He hasn't quite been himself. He said after the Butler game that he feels a little bit sped up or rushed offensively. So maybe it's just a matter of finding his groove again. And once he starts seeing the shots go down consistently and he gets back to shooting his normal percentage, maybe that'll kind of boost the rest of his game as well. But yeah, I mean, it's just kind of interesting because you don't want to keep harping on something when a guy's averaging over 20 points and still playing well. I mean, every national media outlet is still talking about Trayvon Blewett, a front runner for National Player of the Year. And everyone that watches Xavier regularly is like, he's not really playing all that well right now. So it's kind of an interesting thing when you follow the program and you're around it enough because you know what he's capable of. But the good news for Xavier is that while this has been going on, J.P. McCura, the last few games in Big East play, has stepped up and been the best player on the court. Quentin Gooden has been good down the stretches of game. Karem Kanner, Sean O'Mara, different guys at different times have stepped up and filled those voids, and they haven't been lost and looking around like, oh, what are we going to do if our leader isn't there? Or what are we going to do if Trayvon's not hitting shots or if he's not aggressive tonight? They've picked up that slack immediately and played really well no matter who's kind of the guy leading them. And I think that's a great sign for this team going forward.
Yeah, and I think one statistic you can look at is three-point shooting. If you go back and you look at the first 10 games of the season, so the Morehead State game through the Colorado game, Trayvon shot 32 of 58 from three for 55%, which is obviously ridiculous. Since then, he's just 14 of 42 from three. For 33%. 33% is not a calamitous number from the perimeter. I mean, there's a lot of guys, like if Quentin Gooden or Paul Scruggs start shooting 33% from three, we'd be throwing a parade. But I think that demonstrates a little bit. He's just not seeing the ball go in. And one thing I would say, it's interesting, I had not heard his comment that he was feeling rushed offensively, but I felt the same way watching him. And I, you know, I'm pretty uneducated when it comes to that, but he did look like he was just sped up a little bit. And I don't know if it's the fact that he's being face guarded more or teams are being more aggressive about getting up in his grill. I will say to the positive though, is that during this slump, especially in these last three games, since Big East play started, he's done a really nice job of getting the line and finishing his opportunities once he gets there. So I think that's a positive. And really, you know, even if you look at the Marquette game where he only was 1 for 8 from three, that was a game where he shot, where he was 10 of 11 from the line and got 8 assists. So a game where he was really making his teammates better. And I think that's maybe until he gets out of this slump, we're going to see more of that, where he has to be a little bit more judicious about taking his opportunities. He had a really nice transition three against Butler that halted a run that they were trying to get on. Actually, no, I'm sorry. That was the one right before halftime that keyed the 7-0 run that really gave Xavier control of that game. So I think he's still obviously contributing in a big way. We're just not seeing him quite at his best. And if he does come back to his best, it will be very difficult for teams to defend against this team, particularly with JP playing the way he is right now. And I would say that JP is having one of the best, the best month or so of his career. His aggressiveness and just his effort is just off the charts right now.
Yeah, he is a wild man all over the court on both ends. And it's like, on the offensive end, some of these games where Xavier's had kind of a bad stretch offensively. I mean, not anything glaring, but just, they have 5 or 6 or 10 possessions or whatever where they just don't seem to be flowing and getting good looks. He's really kind of kept them going through those stretches just by throwing his body into people. I mean, just driving in, slamming into people, and whether it's him eventually kicking out and getting some ball movement started or him drawing fouls, he's just done a tremendous job of that and completely sacrificed his body for this team in a lot of different ways. Like, if Trayvon Blewett wasn't on this team, it'd be interesting to see what JP's numbers looked like. If you took a guy, a guy who, because JP McCarr could easily be a guy getting 20 shots like Trayvon does a lot of times on most teams. And he's really kind of dialed it back a bit this year in terms of his aggressiveness in those crazy shots or those maybe questionable looks at times. But those are also some of the shots in past years where we've seen him hit a few of those, and then it gets him going for those really big nights. So it's kind of been an interesting progression for JP McCarr, where he's kind of dialed back the wildness a little bit, became a more efficient player. But at times you almost wonder, because he's playing so well, what would it be like if he was still throwing up a couple of those wild shots and he did take, 23 or 25 shots in a game? What would we get out of JP McCarr if he had to be the star kind of by his lonesome on a team that wasn't as good as this? It would be interesting to watch. Fortunately for him and Xavier, they don't have to worry about that because this team is really good around him and he's kind of catered his game to that personnel and to be, give them the best chance of winning. And he's really, there was a few games there. I remember he didn't score as much and people were kind of, wondering if he was going to break out of it there for a little bit. But since Big East play started, he's been awesome and really kind of carrying this team while Trayvon has been slumping a little bit, even though Trayvon has still been putting up a lot of points, obviously. Dan, anything else from the last few Big East games that you wanted to kind of point out or talk about?
I thought Kaiser Gates had probably his best game in a while against Butler. Handed a pretty difficult assignment, being the primary defender on Keelan Martin, who obviously got 25 points on 26 shots. Actually, both him and Baldwin kind of had Kobe-esque lines. I think if you put their lines together, it would be like peak period Kobe Bryant. 53 points on 50 field goal attempts or something like that.
Yeah.
But I thought Kaiser played pretty well. I knocked down a couple threes, took care of business at the foul line. So that's good to see. I mean, obviously he is not, unfortunately the last few weeks he had kind of receded a little bit in a way that's been somewhat familiar to us over the course of his career, where he'll have a really big game and then, he's not really engaged or isn't really part of the game offensively for the next several. I don't think Xavier can afford that. I think he's got to be a contributor more as we go into Big East play, because his ability to step out on the floor and be a pick and pop guy as a four face up deep. And then with the versatility he gives you on the defensive end, he's such a crucial player for Xavier. And hopefully this is the harbinger of him being more active offensively as things move forward. But we probably should move on to next week's games, Rick. We're trying to keep this one short for you folks. As you're probably aware, the Skinny Podcast is on hiatus this week, so we wanted to get some content out to you, even if it is somewhat truncated. Rick, looking at Providence, obviously they played a pretty incredible game last night against Marquette, with Marcus Howard scoring 52 points in an overtime road victory at the Dunkin' Donuts Center. What have you seen from Ed Cooley's team so far this year, and how do you feel about where they stand going into this game?
Well, they've just been up and down. And you know, obviously they're off to this 1-2 start in conference play, so their backs are kind of against the wall, and I think that's how every team will feel almost every game during conference play this year, if you're not maybe Villanova and Xavier, because they're also bunched up there, and it's just going to feel like you're falling behind the pack if you're losing a couple games in a row. So Providence is going to be desperate for a win. They're going to be at home, and they've got the type of team that gives that can give Xavier trouble, because Kyron Cartwright is one of the best players in the country when it comes to getting in the lane, and he's small and super quick and a tremendous creator, a guy who really, you know, he can score, but he's a guy that really just elevates the play of all of his teammates on the offensive end. And alongside of him, Makai Ashton Langford hasn't been great to this point, but he's also an athletic guard that can get in the lane off the dribble, and that's sort of where he excels. So I guess the biggest concern is, can Xavier control or contain those two guys enough to make sure that the supporting pieces on this Providence team don't get off for a big night? I think kind of the one guy that you look at as the X factor, or the guy that can really take Providence to another level when they're at their best, is Alpha Diallo. He's 6'7". You know, he's a sophomore this year. We heard a lot about him last year as a freshman, and he hasn't been shooting the ball as well. Coming into this season, they were talking about, oh, he's a much improved shooter. He's going to make an impact from the perimeter more this year. But what I've seen is when he gets really aggressive on the glass, and when he's taking the ball aggressively to the rim and drawing some fouls, that's where he can really give you trouble. And now, if the threes fall, obviously it's an issue as well. But when he's aggressive and when he's involved in their offense, I think they become a lot tougher to beat. So I'd also watch out for him. When those two guards are getting to the lane, if they're making Alpha Diallo and Rodney Bullock and those guys play better, that's when you get worried as a Xavier fan.
Well, and Rodney Bullock will be, and it'll be interesting. Obviously, he missed the Marquette game, but I believe he did with like a stomach flu or something like that.
Yeah, he was sick, so I have to imagine he'll be back.
Probably not something that'll affect him for Saturday's noon tip. But, you know, a couple days after that, you never know how somebody's going to react. But obviously, that was such a perfect storm for Providence to lose that game. I mean, they had a commanding lead. They completely bungled the end game with turnovers and bad decisions, missed foul shots. And you have a situation where they actually went to the foul line 41 times in that game. They hit 32 foul shots. Marquette only attempted 16 and somehow managed to lose the game. It was one of those insane, it took an insane confluence of events to keep Marquette in that game between, say, the 5-minute mark and the last minute of the game. And then all of a sudden everything just went to hell for Providence. So we'll see how things look on Saturday, but you know, Xavier has the reputation, although they weren't that way against Butler, of being killers in a close game in that kind of situation. And Providence obviously had some shakiness there. So if it's a close game coming down the stretch, that may be something to watch.
Yeah, and Providence, the way they want to beat you, or the way they've been successful beating teams this year, is when they make threes and they get to the free throw line a lot. They're good at both of those things. And they're not like a lights out 3-point shooting team, but they get on some pretty darn good runs when they're hot. And considering they're playing at home, that's something you always got to worry about. They're not the toughest team in the world. They don't rebound very well. They're not like locked in defensively and make it super tough on you to score. So I think Xavier really just has to kind of be a really disciplined and tough team. If you stick to what Xavier does well, that you keep working for good looks on the offensive end, you take care of the basketball, and you rebound the heck out of it, I think you come away with this win almost regardless of how everything else plays out. But that Providence team getting hot from the outside at home is probably the biggest concern heading into this one. And then things don't really get any easier for Xavier after that, because on Wednesday they head to Villanova. And
just write it off. It's not worth talking about.
I mean, that's just, we know what that's been like, I think if nothing else, it's going to be a fun measuring stick for this team because of how they've been playing and where they're ranked. And obviously what Villanova has been doing as well. It's just a fun game to see where is Xavier at, you know, I mean, almost regardless of what happens, in terms of that result, it's how do they match up? What, if nothing else, what is that second game going to look like when they return to the Cintas Center?
Yeah, I'm being glib. I mean, there's, you know, at some point the law of averages states that Xavier will give them a game on the road. I do notice that this year they're playing at the Wells Fargo Center instead of on campus, which is different. I think every previous Xavier Villanova game has been at the Pavilion.
Well, the Pavilion's been renovated, correct?
I think you're right. So the fact that the game is being played downtown, well, not downtown, but in the stadium complex in Philadelphia, maybe that helps Xavier a little bit, because it's a it won't be quite as much of a true road environment, I guess. I mean, it still will be, because the crowd will be there and be very partisan for Villanova, but it won't be quite the same as going on campus to their gym, where you've had just like, which has been just a house of horrors over the years.
Yeah, I mean, the Pavilion was essentially like a little dump, right? I mean, that was kind of the thing. You felt like you were going into play in one of those crappy A-10 gyms, but you were playing one of the best teams in the country in it.
Originally named after John DuPont, who was the subject of that film, Foxcatcher, the crazy wrestling dude. People forget that. People forget that because they took his name off the arena after he shot a dude. But well,
that was
spoiler alert.
That was a that was a really good tidbit, Dan. Thank you for that. Anything else you want to get to here outside of the Mac stuff?
No, I don't think so at this point. I mean, I would just say that the things that I'm looking the most for in these road games is just poise from Xavier. They really did a great job of holding it together at Marquette. They never really seemed to lose a grip on that game. We've seen them come back from big deficits at home. But I do wonder, the one thing that we haven't perhaps seen yet is how will they manage it if a team like a Providence or a Villanova comes hot out of the traps on the road and puts them in a position where they have to chase. That is a scenario that played it out a little bit last year and did not go well for Xavier for the most part, granted, for the most part, with a depleted roster. So if that happens, I'm going to be looking pretty closely to see what Xavier's response looks like.
Yeah, because this team does feel different in that regard. They feel like they've been mentally tough. They feel like they haven't panicked in any of those situations, and they haven't folded either. They've made their runs when they've needed to make their runs. So, yeah, how does that hold up against a team of that caliber? We'll see. It should be interesting. One more quick thing here to get to, because I'm assuming this is probably going to be talked about at some point on the message boards and everything else. So I figure I'd put the takeout real quick. Tim Sullivan, who writes for the Courier-Journal, was talking to some sources about what's next at Louisville. And obviously, with the way Louisville lost to Kentucky this year, what happened was Padgett lost any chance of really getting a serious look at being the head coach next year, unless he leads Louisville on a Final Four run. I mean, it's just, you don't lose to UK like that and as an interim coach and have people look at you seriously as a viable candidate going forward. So people are obviously wondering what's going to happen at Louisville. Tim Sullivan tweeted, former trustee says Kenny Payne checks all the boxes to be Louisville's next basketball coach. Obviously, Kenny Payne is at Kentucky. A well-connected coach says it will be Xavier's Chris Mack. Look, guys, nothing new here, right? Like, people have been saying for a year, we've been saying for a year, Chris Mack is going to be one of the favorites to get that Louisville job. Nothing has changed with that. Nothing is going to change with that. If you asked me my thoughts on it, I'd say Chris Mack is probably the leader in the clubhouse to be the next coach at Louisville. I don't think that should come to us as a surprise to anyone. I've been saying for years that the main job to worry about losing Chris to is the Louisville job. On the flip side of that, had this job come open at any other time, under any other circumstances, I think it was a no-doubter that Mack was gone. There was no way that Xavier was going to keep him. It wasn't even really worth talking about. You should just start thinking about who the next head coach at Xavier was going to be, assuming Louisville wants Chris Mack, which in the situation they're in now, I can't imagine they don't. But with the way things have unfolded and the fact that they're going to be hiring a coach who is going to be walking into theoretically some type of really difficult scenario, whether that's death penalty, I'm getting less and less optimistic about that being the case. But, I mean, they're going to be docked opportunities at the postseason. They're going to be docked scholarships. There's going to be some heavy sanctions you would expect coming down after what Pitino did at Louisville. So I do think Chris Mack will have to look long and hard about how much he wants to walk into a really difficult rebuild situation, how much he wants to be the guy right after Pitino who has to do that rebuild, who's going to have probably a really difficult road to hoe in terms of winning over the fan base and everything else, and how much he wants to give up a really great situation at Xavier where you know everyone's committed to winning at basketball. You've recruited well recently, you know, not including the 2018 class, and you've got a pretty talented roster, although it's maybe not the deepest coming back for next season. So, again, I don't think there's much else to add other than the fact that, yes, Chris is going to be a candidate. I would imagine he's going to be one of the favorites. I would imagine Louisville will really want him, but I think this is the best situation possible for Xavier because this job is coming open at a time where it's not ideal for Chris to take it. So he will actually have to think long and hard before deciding he wants to jump ship for Louisville.
Right. I mean, it's something that will present itself when the season's over. I think right now you're going to hear a lot of chatter coming out of Louisville because it's just that university, it's an even bigger issue than just the athletic department. I mean, you have the former university president being pushed out. You have all kinds of issues with the University of Louisville Foundation. The athletic department, obviously under Tom Jurich, was something completely else. Patino is still hanging out there with a lawsuit. So there's a lot of craziness going on there. And I'm sure there's going to be a lot of people who are going to throw their opinions into the mire as this season progresses because U of L is probably not going to be that great this season. But yeah, I mean, it'll shake out after the season. And by then, you know, maybe we've got a little bit more clarity about what's going on with the FBI investigation, et cetera. Maybe Chris at that point feels like, well, double my salary, I'll take my chances. You know, I'll take my chances with potential sanctions down the road. Maybe he looks at it and says, I don't want any part of that. I'm happy where I am. I don't know. But as of right now, with Xavier sitting fifth in one poll and fourth in the other, and with the best part of a Big East regular season campaign ahead of us, I don't think it's that much really to worry about or think about at this point.
Yeah, and I have no intention on having this being a continued storyline through the rest of the season. I don't want to ruin this great Big East conference play by talking about Chris Mack potentially leaving. But since it is coming back up, resurfacing again, and that's expected because Louisville is struggling and their season's basically over at this point to that fan base, I figured we should address it at least again to let you guys know that nothing's changed, nothing's new. You know, the sources coming out that are saying Chris Mack's going to be the guy, that isn't a surprise. Like, people have been saying that, and other coaches have been saying that for well over a year. So don't get, like, all excited or worried that this is new information that, oh, man, it's really happening now and Chris is going to be going to Louisville. This is the same stuff that's been said for a long time. There's a lot of people who have thought Chris Mack is going to be the next coach at Louisville after Rick Pitino leaves. So I wouldn't get too worried about that. This thing still has to play out, as Dan mentioned. So,
I mean, Kentucky people were talking, connected people in Kentucky on both sides of sort of the basketball aisle down there were talking about Mack replacing Pitino when the Hooker scandal came out.
Right.
That was, what, a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess It's all noise until that job is actually open and until it becomes clear that Chris is willing to consider it and is actively interested in the position.
Absolutely right. You guys have been listening to another edition of the Dayton and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. For Dan, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Zip them up.